This is tape 3 of the Oral History Project interview with John Weaver. It is being conducted in his office in his Oostburg home on the shores of Lake Michigan. This morning I'd like to go into some of the details of putting together the University of Wisconsin system. And I realized that from the very start, you were what I would think hampered by budget restrictions, which the new governor almost immediately imposed. Would you discuss that?
Well, there's no question, but what the very austere approach that Governor Lucey took from the very beginning to the university budget was one of our ongoing and indeed almost overriding concerns and problems throughout the first year I was president of the University of Wisconsin, and subsequently for 5.5 years or so, president of the new system. Mr. Lucey had a very clear cut belief, an often repeated one, and a constantly implemented one, that one of the principal high roads to political salvation in his day was to be responsive to what he perceived to be something close to a tax revolt on the part of the people of Wisconsin. I must say there was measure of reality, there was a real measure of reality to this. People not only in Wisconsin but elsewhere, I think, had come to the point where taxes were just such that they didn't want to have to pay more taxes. They were resentful of the taxes they were paying in many ways. And it is not surprising that Mr. Lucey, who I think had a great deal of political ambition, not only to hold the governorship for a substantial period of time, but the possibility that he might march on from that to other political goals, was very responsive to the belief that he had to hold down taxes. And as history showed, he claimed a no tax increase budget for all of the 6.5 years he was governor, and was preparing to continue to go along that route were he to have run for another term. The problem with it, of course, was that all of the branches of state government were caught up in days of galloping inflation, and increases in the budget, substantial increases in the budget, didn't necessarily mean increases in program or capacity of the universities to perform their expected functions. It was simply a matter of trying to keep the costs of university operation up with inflation, and to be sure that staff members were getting salary increases at least equivalent to inflation. Obviously, we needed funds for salary improvements really beyond the limits of inflation, but we weren't even able to achieve equity with inflation in the salary increases that were made. And this caused great unhappiness among the employees of the university, and I would say very especially among faculty members of the university, of the universities of the system, and justifiably so, because their real income was declining. In spite of all this, Mr. Lucy put the financial screws down on the university from the very beginning. He talked of austere budgets and austere budget requests, that he talked of how we were going to have to proceed along lines that he referred to from very early days on his governorship as productivity savings. You know, productivity savings in a university setting are a lot easier to contemplate than to achieve. The university isn't like a manufacturing establishment where certain kinds of procedures can be instituted that will cause products to cost less because of somehow greater efficiency of production. Teaching isn't exactly it's nothing that can be dealt with like a production line in a factory. And so we were called on for productivity savings. The record will show the successive years of the productivity saving demands that the university was confronted with. But the fact of the matter was that over a period of about well, certainly the first two biennia of Governor Lucy's administration, the university budget was, in real dollars, very severely curtailed, because he had control of the legislature, or virtual control of it, and his recommendations to the legislature were almost certain to be top limits of what the university could hope for budget. And so we were confronted with productivity savings and so-called, and austere budget restrictions of a variety of kinds that gave the university and the universities of the new system great tensions resulting from financial difficulties. It became so difficult that, as the record will show, we were forced to declare a state of fiscal emergency on a number of the campuses in the system, a state of fiscal emergency which made it possible for us, even under AAUP rules, to terminate appointments for tenured people.
Now, we should go into that a bit, because this is not much understood, why this should come about.
Well, it's it's a long, complex, and very sensitive story. The termination of tenured people is a virtually unheard of thing in American academia, certainly among top universities. But we were forced to it by the simple fact that we simply did not have the funds to support all the staff that the universities had, combined with the fact that many of the state universities that had come into the new system had very high tenure densities, up to 100% of the personnel in some departments. And if a department had to be cut back because enrollments didn't justify the full complement of staff in the department, and some persons had to be let go. In many cases, they just inevitably were tenured people. And we did declare on four or five of the campuses a state of fiscal emergency in order to accommodate the budgets that were available to us, to the job to be done. I'm very glad to say that when inspected by the courts, by the federal court, that the university was upheld as having handled this entire matter, which was a brand new kind of thing to have to deal with in American higher education. The courts ruled that we had dealt fairly with the people involved. We had given proper notice to them for termination appointments. That we had properly established a state of fiscal emergency in the cases where this was had to be done. But as one can believe, for those of us who, from the administrative point of view and among the regents who had to be involved in this very unfortunate business, these were very difficult days indeed, and we did everything we could to try to take care of the some 82 or 84 tenured persons that we had to release, in terms of finding them, seeking to find them employment on other campuses in the system, or in terms of helping them to, in one way or another, retrain themselves so that they could find a useful place on their campus or others in the system in a somewhat different oriented teaching mission. We tried to help them where we could find positions outside the system. We worked very hard at retraining programs and at replacement programs. We finally reduced that 82 or so tenured layoffs. We finally brought that down to rather small number of maybe two dozen or so people for whom we were ultimately unable to do anything. And these were usually people who just for one reason or another were completely unwilling to move from the place they were in, from the location they were at, for various kinds of personal reasons. But we made a what I thought was heroic effort to try to provide alternate employment in one way or another for these people. Nonetheless, it was a sort of an historic kind of tragic series of events that led us to this, which were a part of the austerity program that the state put us under. I can only say that I'm pleased that we were able, through the directed efforts of the central administration and the chancellors who were the most intimately involved, we were able to do it in a way which was generally accepted, as I said a moment ago, by the courts, and was generally accepted by the AAUP and other and elsewhere in academic circles as at least having been handled properly.
I was curious about this. I know that in the earlier history of the university, during the Depression years, in order to avoid this kind of thing on the Madison campus, they had what they called waivers,
right,
which is not understood either very well. But the faculty did agree to a cut in pay, which for a time. Was this sort of thing considered at all as a possibility?
No, I don't know that we ever seriously considered the waiver technique, because this would have involved very great difficulties for all of the faculties on all of the campuses. And we tried to restrict the travail of position termination to those campuses that were in the greatest difficulty in terms of enrollment and the tenure density and so on. We didn't have to do this sort of thing at Madison or Milwaukee. And I think it would have, I think it never quite occurred to, or never would have occurred to anyone to think that we should have spread the, that aspect of the fiscal austerity to all of the universities of the system. We tried as best we could to restrict it to those institutions that had the most severe problems. There was a difference among the campuses in those in which there were continuing increases in enrollment as opposed to those where there were very much slower or even declines in enrollment, which gave different problems at different campuses. Furthermore, the necessity for bringing terminations of appointments also was associated with different curricular requirements that the faculties had agreed upon on different campuses, where in some cases, for instance, a dropping of a history requirement for undergraduate degrees all of a sudden reduced the enrollment in history on a given campus by maybe 50%. But when the history department on that campus was almost 100% tenured people, and their enrollment in history on the campus, in part because of decision on the part of the faculty of that campus to remove a specific requirement, you had a problem that had to be dealt with in a fiscally austere time, but it didn't seem reasonable to consider sharing that kind of difficulty with other institutions in the system where conditions were different. I will say, however, on the matter of no sharing resources in times of austerity, that there was some sharing of resources on campuses that gave up resources for the salvation of sister institutions in the system. The record will show how that went. I don't pretend to carry in my head the figures and the specifics of the matter, but it is a part of official record. But there was some giving up by some campuses in the interests of trying to prevent complete disaster on other campuses. But you know, very much of that kind of thing is almost more than a system could be expected to ask, where one university has to, because of difficulty in another university, give up its resources and take on difficulties too.
That could lead to a lot of tension between...
It sure could, and it did in various ways at various times. And I guess one point I'd like to make is that Mr. Lucy could hardly have given a central administration of a system a more severe, a more difficult, at times seemingly impossible task than to A, have given us merger and insisted that everybody had to live together in a single household, and then simultaneously visit upon that system extremely severe austerity, financial austerity, that would produce the very kinds of internal tensions that to make the system work one was working so hard to avoid.
Could you be specific?
Well, you know, if as I think I said on the previous tape, tape just before this one, there was that from the start, when everybody was put together in a common system, there was a tremendous amount of suspicion and internal jealousy of one campus seeming or being possibly in a position to get advantages over another campus. And we worked very hard to try to bring equity to the manner in which the system was operated and the various institutions within it were treated, and worked very hard at trying to bring confidence among the people at the various institutions that this equity did in fact exist. And then to find ourselves in a position where the severity of the financial austerity had to be visited more on certain institutions and certain departments in certain institutions than in others, because enrollments were different or requirements were different or one thing or another that was inevitably going to cause differences in resource need. We were having to create the very sort of frictions that tended to pull apart seams in the garment that we were trying so hard to sew together. It would have been very, very much easier to have brought off comfortable merger for everybody in days of financial comfort, that in days when you were having to cut back here, there, and the other place because of lack of dollars. And there was one thing about the financial austerity that was very, very difficult to cope with and to explain anywhere throughout the system, and that was that it seemed so clear that the university system was treated more austerely than almost any other major branch of state government.
Do you feel this is the case?
That can be demonstrated from a study of the figures.
Was this
Mr. Lucy had made the initial claim, and he never gave up the claim that it ought to be true, whether it was or not. that merger was going to save a lot of money.
So I heard.
It was never quite clear to anybody exactly why it was going to save a lot of money, except a lot of generalizations that there would be less duplication of programs and this, that, and the other thing. But in truth, the claim that we had to demonstrate that merger was going to save a lot of money was accompanied by the demand that our productivity savings had to be greater than almost anybody else's in state government, and was accompanied by more severe cuts in our base budget than any other major branch of state government that I know of. I don't know whether this was to be attributed to the fact that Mr. Lucy had a special antagonism for the university, or whether he simply saw the universities as being so large a consumer of tax dollars that this was a particularly fruitful area in which to make major state savings simply because we were big. I don't know exactly what his thinking and motivations on some of this were, but I know that many, many times we found ourselves working up from we're trying to work our way back in our dealings with the legislature from more severe recommended cuts than other major agencies of state government. And this brought tensions to an uneasy young system that were very difficult to cope with. And I really don't know. I do know that the university was constantly battling with state government over the fact that we were being given cuts that were doing us severe damage, and that I felt were unfairly heavy cuts in the university as compared to the rest of state government. We had a lot of unhappy people who it promoted the cause of the company union type activities of the former state universities, because they began to feel that the only way they were going to get an equal shake from state government was to unionize in a formal bargaining sense. And there were many days when I began to wonder if it might not be true that the faculties should be strongly tempted to organize in order to get fair treatment. The fact that the faculties of the universities over several years got less adequate salary adjustments than the organized employees of state government was a pretty strong motivation for unionization among those faculties who had already made certain moves in that direction, as they had in the TALF organization. In any event, we had, I would say, throughout the years of my presidency and the governor's incumbency in his office, the universities had the had very severe financial problems, and I would say that the whole basis of it was really that the governor was committed to having the political advantage of being able to say he had held down on there being new taxes in Wisconsin, and whether there was a suffering of state services as a result was less important, and for the time at least less demonstrable than the fact that you could claim you'd held back on tax increases.
Yes. I'm wondering, you brought up the question of faculty unionization, Indigo, and this is still not a completely settled matter. It's still in the wind, I feel.
Well, indeed it is.
What's your personal view on this?
Well, I think my personal view is that I guess I would like to say in the first instance on that subject that I do not feel that I have anti-union attitudes. I think organized labor has has done many things that have been right and that have been helpful to the progress of a well-balanced economy in this country. And I have had the very best of relationships as a university president with union people, both at the University of Missouri and at Wisconsin. The labor union has seen the public university as their kind of university. We serve their kind of people. The university and organized labor have not had friction between them. But I would have to say that in terms of faculty people, professional faculty people, I have had some severe doubts as to whether the industrial model of organized labor type of, that the model of American organized labor from industry was really an acceptable prototype for what makes sense for professional people in a university setting, in a university faculty setting. University faculties and universities like Wisconsin have engaged in very important systems of governance. Administrators have been faculty members, and faculty members have become administrators, and there has been a sort of a combined working together in the determination of the destinies of the institution. It has not been an adversary relationship, it has been a closely entwined and a closely bound sort of mutual endeavor between administration and practicing faculty. I think this has had a lot to do with making a university like the one at Madison great. It's been a mutual endeavor of the wisdom and the outlook of both groups of people, those who administer and those who teach. I personally am very much concerned about what the changes will really be when you have under unionization, if you do have it, what the changes would be between in terms of the adversary relationships that would then be developed between faculty members and administrators. You see, really, we haven't functioned as a university in a setting like Madison as management and labor. It's anything but that sort of a context. And if all of a sudden you take those who are doing the administrative chores and put them on one side of a table in an adversary relationship with the functioning faculty, I think some terribly important things would be lost. And indeed, are administrators of a university a counterpart for industry management anyway? We aren't in a profit-making business. It isn't a matter of quarreling with employees over what's a fair share of the profits that are put in one place or another. The real, what some of the real questions that would arise in the mind of a university president or a dean or even a department chairman, if he were judged to be management instead of employee in this kind of adversary union relationship. If I, as president, were confronted with wage demands from a faculty union, I'd be put in a position of, because I don't control the amount of money that's going to be available for faculty increases in pay, for instance, I would have the dilemma on my hands of joining the governor and the legislature as an adversary to the faculty, because it's the legislature and the governor who are engaged in producing the funds that could adjust pay demands. Or I could join the faculty and be in an adversary relationship with the governor and the legislature. I think in either case you've got an impossible or an intolerable sort of a situation. Better that the president not be in an adversary relationship either with his faculty or with the governor and the legislature. I wonder with whom does a faculty bargain in effective unionization? Do they bargain with the, there's no point in bargaining with the president because he doesn't control the money. Do they bargain with the governor, or do they go down and start bargaining with the Joint Finance Committee, the legislature? If that's what they're doing, then they really hardly need a president, because what's his function? Where does he go in that kind of a situation? Well, as I say, it's not that I am anti-organized labor or anti-union. But I do have some very serious questions in my mind as to whether or not the industrial model of unionization is really adaptable in a meaningful way to an academic community. And do we really want to put the faculty in a position of being permitted to strike? Who loses? It isn't the governor and the legislature if the faculty strikes. Who loses is the students and the parents of the students who are helping them pay the expenses of being in the university. And I'm not sure that the faculty wants to be in a position of penalizing students and parents for the sake of being able to force the hand of a governor and a legislature who has the who can afford to sit and wait for negotiations to pull matters back to a level that they find acceptable. When you're dealing in a public service, it seems to me the right to strike is a very complex and doubtful matter. And in any event, I've seen unionization and the right to strike in institutions of higher learning in other settings that has led to great and often very destructive results. And there's no question but what this is going to be a live issue for a number of years to come. But as I come out of my background of the traditions of a university like Madison and Minnesota, where faculty governance and faculty participation in decision-making is a strong and effective tradition, I worry about where unionization leads us. And I think it's a very, very important issue for the years immediately ahead, and I do not see the fully satisfactory resolution of it in my own mind as I contemplate it from here.
What do you think of this recent move by the Madison campus to have more direct input to the legislature?
Well, I take it that is a manifestation of the fact that the Madison campus faculty, where the traditions of faculty governance have been so strong.
They pride themselves on this.
They pride themselves on that. And generally speaking, I think they do not want the adversary relationships of unionization. And yet, they now find themselves in the uncomfortable position of having to have some alternative to the tough position in the state universities that we've got to unionize and we've got to bargain and we've got to be organized. They've got to be able maybe to say that they have a more formal manner or mechanism by which they can represent their needs directly to the people who do control the conditions of their employment, which is ultimately the governor and the legislature. I think the truth of the matter is that the way in which presidents and deans have operated with the Madison faculty over the years, they've had all those rights anyway. I can't remember ever having gone to significant sessions of the Joint Finance Committee that I haven't always sought, both before going, full consultation with the faculty on what they thought our request should be framed like. And I can't remember ever having gone to hearings before the Joint Finance Committee that I haven't invited faculty leadership to be present and to be heard if they wanted to be or were invited to be, or if they felt that the presentations that the administrative officers were making were less than adequate in any way, they were encouraged to ask for a right to speak the faculty position themselves. We've always operated in the manner of faculty involvement in the decision of what we would ask for, and we've always sought to involve the faculty in influencing the legislature in the decisions they've made on those requests. I haven't felt that the Madison faculty formalization of that request in the last year or so has been a vote of no confidence in the manner in which the administration was seeking to represent their needs.
Why do you think they felt it necessary?
Well, as I say, I think only as an antidote to the pressure on other campuses toward unionization. Is toward unionization and the feeling that maybe they needed to have something they could point to that more formalized their own faculty right to be heard directly. I've talked with a variety of number of faculty members in Madison about the matter, and I haven't sensed that any antagonism between the administration and the faculty on these matters, or a sense that the faculty didn't feel they were being adequately consulted, or that they were being allowed to be heard. But I've sort of had the feeling, maybe incorrectly, that these more recent moves in Madison have simply been so that they could say, we still don't really believe in unionization for the faculty, but at least we've taken steps to be sure that our points of view are heard directly on salary matters. But look at how this salary matter was handled just this last year in this current biennial budget. I had set up a task force of faculty people, representative of institutions across the system, to determine let the faculty task force determine the level at which they felt salary improvement requests should be made in this biennium. A very fine, a very thoughtful faculty group chaired by Professor Leon Schur of the Milwaukee campus came up with essentially the request that we made. It was a restrained request. I think a very responsible and a very restrained request, and it was well heard downtown. And Leon Schur and other members of that task force helped me present the case to the legislature. I really don't feel that I really feel that the Madison campus tradition, the faculty and the administration working together in these determinations and in trying to influence state government to accept jointly achieved decisions was working very well right to the end of my my tenure in the president's office. I was very grateful for the hard, conscientious work that the faculty task forces were doing in helping us put the budget requests together, and I think they felt satisfied that they had had a completely adequate voice in the way those requests were formulated and the way in which they were delivered. There are those who have wanted, and particularly in the TELF organization in the state universities, there have been those who want to move on directly to formal unionization. I think the Madison faculty, generally speaking, and Milwaukee too, has really not wanted to do that.
I guess it's not a subject that's going to be dropped very soon. This will
unionization.
Unionization.
Oh, I'm sure not. And of course, you have a legislative committee that is looking at various forms of implementing legislation that would permit unionization among the faculties. The discussion is still going on before that committee. The regents. Together with or based on the work of a task force of faculty and administrators that worked with regents, have one suggested implementation bill before that committee. TELF has another, which is a good bit closer to the traditional form of unionization. The regent bill tries to maintain faculty governance as a tradition, along with some measure of authorization for unionization. There may be a compromise of those two positions. There may be an entirely new position introduced before the legislature is through. I'm not close enough at the moment to what is currently going on to be able to predict whether or not the current legislature is going to come up with a an implementation bill and the in the session yet to be completed, but it most certainly is as yet an unresolved issue, and it's one that's going to continue to be heard from for some time to come. And even if and when implementation language is implementation authorization is provided by the legislature, there's going to be a lot of internal debate within the system as to what form of motion the campuses of the system are going to want to take with respect to proceeding under any kind of implementation ruling. One thing I think is clear, the Madison campus is going to demand, and the Milwaukee campus too, and probably Green Bay and Parkside that are psychologically more closely allied to Madison and Milwaukee than they are to the state university system. I think their positions are likely to be ones that demand that each campus has a right to move under any kind of implementation legislation according to their own campus views of the matter, and probably in ways quite different
from the way in which implementation might take place on the most of the state university campuses. I do not believe there is going to, in the foreseeable future, be a common move toward the implementation of any kind of union organization for the system as a whole. There's going to be a lot of campus autonomy involved in how it's pursued.
Do you see it as something which eventually will come about in some form?
Well, at times I have thought it was inevitable. At other times I've been less sure. I think that actually at Madison it's less of a certainty than it is at some of the state universities. But it seems to me, as I have looked at the at universities across the country, that the rush toward faculty unionization had a lot more momentum and a lot wider spread attraction 5, 6, 7 years ago than it does now. I think the momentum for this has slowed somewhat. I think it has been slowed because at institutions like Hawaii and the State University of New York and others, unionization once tried and practiced has raised a lot of questions and a lot of problems that in many ways have dulled enthusiasm on the part of those engaged in it. And so I don't know, but in answer to your initial question, will it be an active matter of discussion for some years to come? There is no doubt that is true.
So we'll see, I guess.
Right.
In time.
Well, I think it's going to be very hard, if indeed possible, for the legislature to refuse implementation legislation of some kind in the foreseeable future. I think the sensitivities of organized labor are such that the legislature is going to be moved to provide some kind of implementation legislation, but exactly what form it will take, or the speed with which, or the manner in which it will be utilized by the various universities of the system once it is passed, I think is an entirely different matter. I think that may be slower.
I see. We sort of started out talking about, economy measures, and we did go into the business of dropping tenured faculty. But I'm wondering what some of the other economy measures might have been.
Well, there were economies squeezed out of our budget in virtually all categories of things. Certainly, I guess I'd like to respond very quickly that economies in terms of any curtailment of academic staff was just about the last thing that we sought economies. We had major reductions in travel accounts, in supply accounts, in maintenance and repair. We reduced personnel in non-academic categories severely. I can remember that we said at the end of the second biennium of retrenchment that we had eliminated over 1,000 employees of the university by necessity in the effort to meet the retrenchment demands of the governor. And of course, of that more than 1,000 people, by far the larger proportion of them were, of course, not faculty people. We began some of our personnel retrenchment by cutting back the size of the system administration personnel itself.
Well, you begun on the Madison campus, hadn't you, even before merger?
When I first came, it wasn't really when I was on the Madison campus as such, but in the administration of what was then a four campus statewide extension and center system University of Wisconsin. I reduced very substantially the costs of the administration of the central administration of the university. I reduced it enough so that I was able in the end of my first year from savings derived from reductions of administrative personnel in the university central administration to provide a fund of a bit better than $100,000 from personnel savings from administration to be used in a small grant program we offered the faculty for projects they wanted to put forward designed to improve undergraduate instruction. But we were always trying to reduce administrative costs in the best ways we could. One, of course, of the great dilemmas that one faced in that connection was that it's always easy for and understandable that faculty people would say in times of retrenchment, why do we have to pay so much for administration? While we actually were struggling hard to reduce the costs of administration and the numbers of people in administrative work, we were faced at the same time with the fact that throughout that those retrenchment years, both the governor's office and his Department of Administration and the legislature were putting multiplying demands on the administration for what they kept referring to as accountability and demanding reports on everything from A to Z on what we were doing, and the effort to try to put those reports out in a responsible way and in the time frames that were required of us, we had a multiplying need for hands in the administration to meet these requirements. So while we wanted to reduce administrative costs and the state was The governor, rather in particular, was complaining about the fact that the university's administration cost too much. They were putting on us the very requirements that made it more and more difficult to meet all the external demands for reports and analysis. Plus the fact that we were trying to develop a whole new way of administrative life and protocol and ground rules and bylaws and means of procedure with which were brand new for trying to cope with a 27 campus system and all of the administrative ways of life that this called for. So we, you know, while at the very time you're trying to reduce administrative costs, the demands on the university for administrative reporting and administrative type work were multiplying.
Yeah. Well, as you just said, you really were setting up a new, well, really a new institution in effect.
No question about it.
And I guess I'm wondering to what extent you may have incorporated the principles and practices of the one you started with.
Well,
the old institution, as it were.
I would say that actually it wasn't possible to incorporate a lot of the or most of the specific ways of life of the University of Wisconsin as I found it when I came into the new system, because when the new system was created, the whole range of life was so entirely different. And we became a system which had to accommodate the traditions and the needs and specialized differences of a family that had never lived together before. And in many, many things, the protocol for everything from how the faculties and the student bodies and the chancellors related to a governing board to how we could set up the first data systems that really were gave us comparable information about all the institutions of the state. We were really just having to start from scratch in an entirely new ball game and an entirely new way of life. You know, one of the very important things, mundane as it may sound, but one of the very fundamental things that Don Percy and his staff and I had to do early on in the merger game was to establish a common data system for all of the institutions of the system. Prior to merger, nothing from full-time student equivalents to workload data to you name it, anything that was quantifiable about the state universities and the University of Wisconsin and its campuses were all done in different ways and according to different categorical definitions, and it was a massive job to begin collecting data from all of the institutions according to comparable data classifications and getting them into the computer so that you could really get comparable data for all of the institutions on any given subject. And this was the only basis on which we could proceed to get into the really tangled and complex and sensitive issues of how we really had equity among the institutions. Because you had to define what you were talking about by categories in the same way. And this had never been done before. And university systems all across the country have looked with some admiration and certainly with a willingness to copy many of the techniques we devised in this method, in this business of trying to computerize a real data system that was providing comparable data for 27 campuses of a very complex system. And I think that this is a job that's pretty well accomplished now. And it's hard to go back and realize how helpless we were before we had that kind of a data system. But it was like many other things. Here was a massive job for administrative production that we had to do efficiently and effectively. At the same time, everybody was demanding us to cut down on the amount of